Welcome everyone to the best practices for contactless, also known as NFC commerce at POS and ATM podcast. Our three expert guests are Mustafa Top, Keith Focic, if I pronounced that correctly, and Simon Hurry, all of Visa. Both have extensive experience with NFC in various environments and use cases. We will begin with brief introductions. So Simon, could you do the first introduction, please?
Sure. Thanks, Rod. My name is Simon Hurry. I'm responsible for the EMV contact and contactless implementation in North America. We pretty much completed that with respect to contact EMV, and we have a heavy focus on NFC these days. It's growing very rapidly, and we're very happy to provide input on how to improve the tap pay experience.
Mustafa, could you follow Simon and introduce yourself, please?
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Mustafa Top, working with Visa. I represent Visa in EMV, most in the groups that develop contactless payments specifications, mostly focusing on the electrical and digital parameters, also called level one physical layer. I represent Visa also in other very standard organizations such as ISO, NC, and NFC form.
Thank you, Mustafa. And Keith, could you introduce yourself? And also, would you correct me on how I pronounced your last name?
No problem. Hi, please. My name's Keith Wojtek, and I am part of Visa. I work on the approval services side for testing and approval of chip products, whether they're contactless or contact. I also sit on EMV Co. as well. I currently chair the card and mobile working group for testing approval of all contact and contactless related products for consumer facing side.
Thank you. I'm Rodman Reef, and I spent many years at Citigroup and built a payment business for them, left several years ago, and started my own consulting business in the payment space. Next, we will move into the discussion of the subject of the podcast. So near-field communication is a set of communication protocols for communication between two electronic devices over a distance of about 4 centimeters, about an inch and a half or less. NFC is based upon inductive coupling between two antennas on the NFC-enabled devices. For example, an antenna on a card or a phone, and the antenna on a POS terminal. Simon, would you like to add anything to the short description of NFC? And also, where can an interested attendee read more about the technology behind NFC?
Sure. As you mentioned, NFC is a short-range wireless communication. At the base of the specification are two ISO standards, ISO 14443 and ISO 18092. These standards don't get you much further than what's known as a RFID tag. They're at the very bottom of the chain with respect to communication. What you actually need to make a payments transaction or a tap-to-pay transaction, often known as EMV contactless, you actually need the EMV specifications, which run on top of NFC. And then on top of the EMV specifications, you also need the various brand specifications for contactless payments. So there's actually a lot in the stack. There's a lot that you need to know and understand. But with respect to finding out more, there's plenty of information on NFC on the web. But for the purposes of this discussion, it's probably more important that you go to the EMV Co. website and or the various brand websites to get the information as it pertains to making payments or tap-to-pay transactions. That's really where you want to focus rather than the underlying technology, which is quite complex and best left to highly skilled engineers.
Thank you, Simon. Keith, what is the role of each of the devices, the terminal, the card, or the phone, in an NFC contactless transaction? Which one is powered and creates the signal between the devices?
Basically, it's the terminal side which you know, basically has a large amount of the responsibility. So the terminal is responsible for generating the power. So its field is basically there to provide power to the component it's going to talk to. Because from a card point of view, cards just have a chip and antenna. They have no inherent power. So they need to be in the field from the terminal to draw power to be able to conduct the transaction and communicate between the two. Items like mobiles or, you know, wearables like watches and things like that, some of those components, you know, all phones have powered components themselves because they have a battery and whatnot. So they provide their own field as well, but still they are working like a card in the sense that they're drawing, you know, the communication, some of the power from the terminal in order to be able to communicate between the two.
Thanks, Keith. Mustafa, what does EMVCO specify for the distance between two NFC-enabled devices? And what factors influence that distance?
Sure. So the communication distance between an EMV contactless card and terminal is defined from 0 to 4 centimeters. This means when a contactless card approaches to the contactless terminal, it is expected to communicate starting at 4 centimeters down to 0. And terminals are also required to work with a card when a response received starting from at least 4 centimeters. However, this doesn't mean that card and terminal pairs can't communicate beyond 4 centimeters. They may start transmitting data way beyond that. A transaction could complete even before the card or mobile reaches to 4 centimeters or below. So 4 centimeter is minimum requirement, but not a limitation for a maximum distance. Although beyond 10 centimeter, it becomes quite difficult, and further after 15, it is even more problematic with the commercial customer devices in the market. On the factors influencing this distance, from pure engineering perspective, there are a number of electrical parameters playing role, such as antenna shape, antenna material, tuning of the antenna for both card and terminal sides, sensitivity and efficiency of the internal circuitry of the card and terminal, surrounding metallic objects and electromagnetic noises that is close to the NFC working frequencies, physical barriers, particularly additional layers or gap between the landing plane of the contactless terminal and the closest spot that a card can reach. For example, if a contactless reader is placed behind 2 or 3 centimeter thick glass or plastic layer, it reduces the working distance that much. Also, after certification and approval of a device, any modification on the hardware or antenna that may have an impact on the distance. Just as a warning, such modification may also cause product to lose its certification.
Mustafa, thank you. Not only did you answer the question that I asked, but you answered the next question too. So thank you very much.
Sure.
Keith, would you like to add something to what Mustafa said about the influences on the variability of the distance for a contactless transaction?
Sure, Rod. It really does come down a lot to the terminal itself and how it's developed and how it's basically the mold of the terminal itself. Because you have a variety of different terminals, whether it's ATMs, gas pumps, standard POSs, and the surrounding materials, not to mention how they're actually built themselves, can have a significant influence. So ATMs and gas pumps, for example, tend to have a lot of surrounding metal, which can have negative impact to the overall field itself because it does distort and basically hamper the field. So it is important to kind of, you know, realize when you're developing these terminal types what's going to be around the NFC antenna and what potential influence it's going to have. Even with standard terminals, you know, placing antennas below an electronic screen or around electronic screen has influence. We see cases where magstripe readers are simply placed too close to the contactless antenna and can cause problems there. So it is really kind of important to realize, you know, when you're putting a terminal together, not only, you know, the antenna size itself, its strength and its properties, but what's going to go around it or nearby that may have an influence, you know, negatively to the overall field, which can, you know, hurt the contactless performance. Mustafa, anything you want to add on top of that?
No, I think you explained pretty good, Keith. This is one of the things that the large-scale machines like gas pumps or ATM, it is basically not possible to test them all together in the lab while the reader is inserted in the in that big physical equipment. So that's one of the reasons that they, as you said, they have to be very cautious once the readers are tested without inserted in these machines. And then when they put it in, then they have to be very carefully checking what is surrounding the reader, actually, and the distance from the card that can reach the closest distance.
Right. And that's an important point, because in many cases in the testing environment, we do not, you know, get like a full ATM or a full gas pump into the lab. That's just not realistic to test. But we do ask for a good representation of those devices in the lab to test it as best as possible. So in many cases, they may provide like the faceplate of portions of the ATM or faceplate of the gas pump to represent where the reader is going to be attached to or what it's going to be affected by. But it's still not necessarily 100% representation of what's going to go into the field. And those additional aspects can still have influence on the contactless reader.
Thank you, Mustafa. Thank you, Keith. Simon, what can the terminal manufacturer or the card manufacturer or the terminal owner, for that matter, do to improve the consistency of the contactless experience? What steps can be taken to improve the user experience?
Yeah, Rod, I think that's the critical question. And some of it has to do with branding and education. And, you know, other factors are really about the implementation in the merchant store or ATM location, whatever device you're dealing with. By that I mean, if folk don't know that they actually have a product that can be used to tap to pay or that can be used for a contactless payment, they're not going to even try to use it. And initially, we noticed that many issuers were putting the contactless symbol on their cards. However, research showed that not many people were familiar with the symbol. This has changed. We've done a lot of marketing, and as have all the brands done a lot of marketing in this respect. And with the open loop transit that's happening in New York and Chicago and other parts of the world, for London, for example, they have done a pretty good job of making consumers much more aware of what the tap to pay symbol looks like. And while it does somewhat resemble a Wi-Fi symbol, it is actually quite different. It's often described as sort of looking like four sausages on a plate, and that's what it looks like on the card surface. However, on the actual terminal, it often has a little hand with a card in it, in addition to that contactless symbol. So that was the first problem. But even with more consumer awareness, there are other things that become critically important with your contactless implementation. So there really are three main things that you have to do, you know, beyond the signage and brand awareness or the symbol awareness of contactless. The first is you need to know when to tap. And this is a bit of a problem because people often see the contactless symbol, but as Mustafa was explaining and Keith, the terminal needs to power up the antenna before it can transmit power and communicate with the card. So it's very important that you power up the antenna at that point in time when you actually want the tap to occur. And in some cases, you'll do that almost immediately when you're doing things like Quick Chip, which is a mechanism that allows you to tap or insert your card prior to the final total amount being available. This is common at merchants like Costco and Safeway, for example. Or you may only power up the antenna after the final amount is known. When you do that, you should signal on the point of sale that, yes, it's okay to tap. And this is often done by displaying on the screen you know, please tap your card, as well as lighting up an LED, often green in color. The second very critical component here is knowing where to tap. And because the antenna is in a specific location on the terminal, you should have that symbol, the tap-to-pay symbol, light up in the area of the antenna. Now, in some cases, the antenna is around on the screen, so tapping in the middle of the screen works just fine. But in other cases, the antenna has been moved to the bottom left of the terminal, and it's very important to display the contactless symbol on that location, and if at all possible, to light it up. We see most of the modern terminals actually light that symbol up, which is really nice and makes it very clear. And then in some cases, the antenna may be at the back of the terminal. Same thing, you know, have an arrow or something alerting the cardholder that they need to tap in that particular location. And then the final thing is, of course, was the tap successful? This is just as important. And often in the early days, people were tapping their cards, but they had to almost wait for an response to come through in order to know that they actually had a successful tap. What is recommended is that, you know, the LED that I talked about not only light up, but actually display a full range or a pattern to ensure visually that the cardholder can see that the tap has gone through. And we normally request a sound or some sort of sound, some sort of audible cue that alerts the cardholder again that the tap was successful. These are, again, very, very important to ensure the optimal cardholder experience at the point of sale. A lot of this information has actually been included in some guides and best practices that we've put out. For example, there's the consumer experience at the point of sale. That's available on both the Secure Technology Alliance website as well as the U.S. Payments Forum's website, and you can Google those.
Great, Simon. Thank you. Those sound like very good guides for people either installing or managing either a point of sale or an ATM system. Mustafa, what is EMVCO's new IQ demodulation technique, and is it a long-term solution to resolve some of the distance variability issues that people have reported with tap-to-pay?
IQ modulation, I have to admit, is a quite technical topic. I'll try to explain first slightly the technical part of it for interested parties. Normally, NFC or EMV contactless uses one carrier signal and one frequency. IQ is a kind of technique involving multiple carrier signals used in the same frequency and each to transmit data in multiple channels. Normally, NFC or EMV contactless payment transactions don't need such technology because we need only one channel. But originally, this was used in mobile phones and satellite communications to increase the amount of data to exchange. In time, it was more and more used by mobile phones, phone products, as well as some cards, recently in contactless transactions. Thus, EMV decided to integrate it to its own specifications so that the terminals can handle these products using IQ modulation properly. So this is expected to enhance the transaction experience with mobile and those cards that are employing IQ modulation. It should help in the long-term all ecosystem eventually.
Great. Thank you, Mustafa. So thank you, Simon, Mustafa, and Keith, and thank you to our listeners. We hope the podcast has been useful and you're able to use the information. Thank you again.